You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Today is Thursday, April 4th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 566 features The Athletic's Jared Weiss.
And I'm Evan Valenti, and today's show is powered by PrizePicks. PrizePicks is the official daily fantasy partner of CLNS Media. Download the app and use the promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a new edition of Celtics Beat. The regular season, it is winding down. We have only a half dozen games remaining before the playoffs begin. My goodness. Thank God. Thank God. I don't want to say we're running out of things to talk about with this team, because there are things to talk about. But, you know, I think you could make the case they're running out of important things to talk about. You know, it all becomes much more relevant, much more magnified, obviously, when we get to the postseason. Celtics are riding a three-game winning streak, all by double figures, most recently the absolute curb-stomping of the OKC Thunder and the hometown kid, Mark Daigneault, on the other side. Now, granted, OKC, incredibly short, no SGA, no J-Dub. Celtics at full strength for what feels like a rarity these days. They've been load-managing guys left and right, but everyone of note out there in Boston obviously responded, a commanding win. So let's talk a little bit about that, what's been going on, what is to come going forward. Jared Weiss here from The Athletic. Of course, Evan Valenti is here. I am Adam Kaufman. Welcome in. Boys, good to see you. Jared, what's going on?
Just enjoying another Celtics game where it's like a two-possession game, and then I look up and all of a sudden they're up by 30. I don't know how that happens.
It is wild, too, because, you know, like from a betting perspective, I looked at it the night before. I see the line at Celtics by 8 and going, I don't know. I mean, I think SGA, J-Dub, I think these guys are going to be back. I know it's the second end of the back-to-back, but they didn't play the night before. It's a bigger game. It's, you know, more notoriety playing in Boston. Seemed like they could have gone that night before, but didn't. Precautionary. I think they're going to play. I'm going to stay away from that line. Those guys get ruled out midday. I pounced on Boston 9.5 and, you know, grew to, I don't know, 11.5 by the time the game actually tipped off. And going back through that game, Boston was largely in front throughout. And then to your point, you know, it's mostly a single digit game for a while. And then like mid third quarter, you sort of just, you know, blink, snap your fingers, whatever. And Boston finishes the game on what, a 40-12 run or whatever it was. And just won that thing going away. We've been having a lot of talk on this, a lot of conversation on this show of late, Jared, last couple of weeks about closing out games. Now, doesn't really apply to last night. This isn't one of those, you know, crunch time minutes, 5-point game or less in the final 5 minutes. Boston, again, blew doors to end this game. But when you see them a little bit earlier on, obviously, respond in that way, you know, put a stranglehold on the thing. Don't let up. Don't take your foot off the gas. Just close this game. Does it give you any more confidence in their ability to win some of those close ones down the stretch that have maybe caused fans a little bit of uncertainty of late?
No, because we're game 75, 6 into the season. They've been doing this for 6 months now, 5 months, whatever it is. They've been doing it long enough. This was nothing new. Also, just no real challengers from OKC, like the two offensive stars of that team. So I wouldn't take anything from this game. But I would just say that you don't need to poke holes at this point. I think their body of work is pretty solidified. This point of the season, just like not really reflective of how things are going to be. I think that Atlanta series probably made it pretty clear. They're fine. They're good. The questions with them are just more about how does the team fare over the course of a series against them when they get a feel for how the Celtics play, and does the Celtics style, does it lose its edge when they're not just getting a team that's like just coming from playing another team and they're getting used to them? You know, I think it's probably going to flatten that gap, like that massive statistical gap that they have over the rest of the league. But I don't think it's going to really change much. I think they're the best team, and they're going to have control against pretty much any team they play besides Denver.
And if they have, you know, it's not just, oh, they're the best team, like we feel like they're the best team, they're the deepest, the most talented when healthy, all of this stuff. They have literally clinched the best record in the NBA. So no matter what happens going forward, they have that. We were talking with Greeny, Barstool Greeny, Dan Greenberg, when he was on with us a few weeks back about that whole 60-20 thing. Well, they are now 60-16, so they've hit the 60 wins before 20 losses. Who knows? Maybe won't even get to 20 losses. How nice would that be? But also, I heard this on the broadcast last night, and I don't remember exactly the number, but Jared, you'd probably know. It was something to the effect, though, of Boston now has the most 25-plus point wins in a single season in NBA history, I think it is. So it's just all of these blowouts, like you said, they've this is not new. They've been doing a lot of this, Ev. So, you know, you tell me. I mean, does it alter your thinking about this team at all, or do you look at it and say, all right, you know, shorthanded Thunder team on the other side. Yeah, they've done this to a bunch of teams. None of this really matters until we see what they can do against what we deem inferior competition in the postseason.
Well, I'll tell you, the fact that they only have three losses at home is a big deal for me. You know, this is a team that really stunk at home in the playoffs last year to an annoying point, right? I mean, Philadelphia, that was just not fun to watch on your home floor. Miami comes in, does the same thing, and it's like, all right, well, this is supposed to be easier at home, not harder. The Celtics are literally making this harder on themselves in order to try to get back to the NBA Finals, as we all know, came a little bit short. But I do like the fact that they've held court at home, with the exception of three games, and they haven't really been tough. There was the LA Lakers loss, which is annoying because LeBron and AD were not in that game. There's the Nuggets game that obviously the 2-point loss, and you could point to literally any time in that game where, you know, I forget who was shooting free throws, but they had three offensive rebounds in that possession towards the end of the game and just had three wide open threes and none of them went in. That was annoying. And then I'm forgetting the last loss. I forget, but it's just one of these things where this is a team that took home court seriously, and we'll see if that plays into the playoffs. You know, if we talk about developing good habits. But that's something that I've been looking for, the at-home dominance. And if they're going to have home court throughout the entire playoffs, it's good to have home court in a place where you didn't lose really this season. So, you know, yeah, the last couple of weeks have been kind of tough just because you knew where Boston was. You knew that they could kind of like take their foot off the gas pedal a little bit towards the end of the year and coast into the playoffs, which is what you want. You want guys to be healthy, but at the end of the day, you're looking for good habits. They might have, and we'll get to this, I think, in a little bit here with Jared, but they might have found something here with Porzingis at the end of games. He's talked a little bit about ramping up. He did this last night post game about ramping up, you know, making sure that his body is ready for the postseason. And I'm sure everybody else is holding themselves is the same, you know, standard as KP is. All the stuff that you want to hear after games, people are saying. And you know, this has been sort of coughing like a 6-month dance here. Okay, it's just everybody is, who cares about the regular season? Nobody really cares. It's all about the playoffs. Well, we're almost there, folks. We're almost there. This is the toughest stretch, I think, personally. It's just like the, all right, we can get this over with. Now we're finally here. Well, while in the meantime, there are certain little things we can poke at. But, you know, last night's game, as Jared said, I'm not taking really anything away from that. Oh, and the fact that KP looked fantastic. That was about it.
Well, I have take us there, getting to KP.
Well, all right. So the end of game struggles are one thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But the one thing I'll say, Jared, and I've had this conversation with a couple of people already just throughout the past couple of days. Is this basically what you were expecting from Kristaps Porzingis when the trade was made this entire season? Or has he been better or worse than you think? Because I'm looking at the entire body of work of Porzingis and what I thought he would be when he first came into Boston. And I got to tell you, he hit every check mark I was looking for. And then above that, he's been as good as you could possibly imagine. I had not nightmares, but little memories in my head of watching Marcus Smart kind of like have his way with Kristaps Porzingis a little bit, as Porzingis would catch it like at the nail or at the elbow. Marcus knew how to get into his body enough to bother that shot. That seems doesn't seem to bother him anymore. The passing has been tremendous. The shooting's been great. The spacing, the defense at the rim. I mean, he's been as advertised, if not more so, in my opinion. How about yours?
I would say he's like 85th percentile of what he possibly could have been. As far as, so like the main reason they got him was the pick and roll game and working him out of the high post. And I think he's been pretty close to as good as you could have hoped for as far as just his dynamic and two-man actions offensively and his ability to stretch the floor and all that. That's been pretty much as they could have hoped. On offense, I think the only thing that's been a little bit lacking is they don't use him in the hard role as much as I would have expected. They don't get to that like deep post entries, the lobs, quite as much as I thought that they could have. And I'm not even sure why, because they do it pretty well, just not as much as I expected. They don't get him to the low block as much as I thought they could. They don't very often have second units where the whole offense is just enter it to him on the low block. They do it a decent amount. A lot of it's more in the kind of mid to high post area and not as much way down there where he like really commands a double. And then I think just the other thing is they don't do that to make him a passer. They don't run a ton of like, you know, rub actions where they'll have a cutter come like right up against where he's posting up and then it draws a double and then he can drop off, stuff like that. They do it every once in a while. Like they don't do a ton of high low with him where they get him the ball in the post and then somebody flashes underneath the rim. These are all things that you've seen them do, and they certainly do it a decent amount. I just thought that they would do it more than we've seen. And I don't know if that's just because there's several other great players that they run the offense through or what exactly that is. But I thought they would use the full range of his ability, and especially his post-passing ability more. And it seems like a lot of the time when he passes out of the post, it's really kind of just he's in the mid-post, you know, kind of just outside of the paint, a little bit higher up towards the free throw line. A team doubles, and he just kind of makes the easy pass to the three-point line, and they swing it around. Not as many backdoor cutters and kind of stuff like that. Not as many complicated actions as I could have imagined that they would do, or at least I envisioned them doing before the season started. And I think probably part of that is also that their offense is a little bit more simplified. Like their offense, a lot of the time can be just find a mismatch, post up that mismatch, everybody spaces around it. And that overall free-flowing nature, I think, has allowed them to kind of overall have the kind of offense they want, but then sometimes limits them a little bit in how creative they can get. And so generally, that hasn't been an issue. Maybe it'll be a bit more of an issue in the postseason. But offensively, he's been like, as far as utilization and range of possibilities for creativity, it's been like an A-. His actual performance has been like a 94 out of 100. Like, it's been really, really good. It's about as good as you could have hoped for without like fully maximizing potential. And then just on defense, his execution, a lot of the drop stuff and ice stuff that they do is good, but it's not like incredible. I shouldn't say good. It's very, very good. Like sometimes the angles he takes are a little bleh. He gives guys a little more space than I think he should. And then they're able to shoot over him, stuff like that. And then they haven't used him as a switcher as much as they could, but they've kind of started to roll that out more, and we'll see how much they use that in the playoffs. But frankly, like you mentioned him talking about ramping up. I was asking him a question on Wednesday night about how his rim protection has been amazing lately. And I asked him and I asked Joe, like, is that just that he's been parking more near the rim lately, so he's getting a ton of stops, or is it getting better? And especially KP was basically like, I'm kind of just like, I'm ramping up now. Like, I'm playing harder and it's going to look even better. So it'll be really interesting to see in the postseason how much his intensity level on defense takes a jump.
What do you imagine these last half dozen games look like? And just to give people an idea, there are five at home of the six, the one road game in Milwaukee. Who knows if Stars even play in that one, as much as you'd like to think it's going to be Tatum Brown against, you know, Giannis and Dame. Who knows? And I mean, it's just that Bucks thing, it's a whole other thing, especially with the comments made by Doc Rivers last night, throwing, you know, everybody under the bus. I mean, that man just, it's unthinkable. The even criticizing the travel crew and people not taking road games seriously. He does no wrong, Doc. But you have Sacramento, Portland, New York, Charlotte, Washington, mostly bad teams down this stretch here of the regular season that are going to be at the Garden. And so you know, what percentage of these six games do you think we see everybody out there versus a rotation of guys that are sitting out? Maybe even that regular season finale is a full on, you know, Red Claws call up situation, and or I guess main Celtics now, no longer the Red Claws.
Yeah, we and, call the Red Claws.
Know, yeah, long live
the still Red the Sears Claws. Tower, and it's still Staples Center.
Exactly. Or, you know, the experimentation on the floor in terms of rotations, in terms of, you know, just the way that, like, we've seen Mazzulla play with Porzingis a little bit of late in terms of how he uses him defensively and on what caliber of player and size of player that he goes against, you know, things that, you know, we haven't done as much of this in the regular season. We may see more of it in the playoffs. We're going to work on this. How much of working on things do you think is going to happen in these next couple weeks?
Yeah, these games should not be real. It should be all BS. It should be they should be resting the vast majority of their starters in most of these games. O'Shea Brissett should be taking the ball up the floor. Steve Mikhailik should be playing the five. Like they should be messing around. I would say don't play Jordan Walsh, because the Maine like has a real chance to win. And frankly, I think it's better for Jordan Walsh if he just wins with Maine and tries to get the G League championship and give him that level of experience. Like that's where he should be playing. I think give the Maine guys their championship and just build, you know, focus on them contending there and staying with that team. You don't need to develop them in these last few games. So they should be starting the end of bench guys. They should be giving Peyton Pritchard significant responsibility. They should be having Sam Hauser running some pick and roll and like doing a lot of playmaking off the catch. They should be playing Xavier Tillman and Luke Kornet a lot in like figuring out who's going to be getting those first round matchups, because they're probably going to need one of those guys a little bit in the first round. What if they end up with Philly or something like that? You're going to really need Xavier Tillman for that series. So I would ramp those guys up. Give your main guys some rest. I mean, for God's sakes, Jaylen Brown needs to stop playing a lot of minutes. You need to, I mean, you gotta, like, the main guys aren't going to just sit out the rest of the time. Like, they need to stay in rhythm. You got to play them a little bit. Honestly, if I'm Joe, I'm bringing JT and JB off the bench and I'm just messing around just to do weird stuff and experiment and all that. But you look at who they have left. It's like, all right, Sacramento's playing for something. They're trying to get out of the play-in. Milwaukee, they've got a slight lead on the East. What do they have, like, two games or something like that on Cleveland? A game and a half on Cleveland. What's really interesting is New York. They have one more game left against New York. New York is kind of fighting for home court in that first round series. And with Julius Randle out for the year now and OG Anunoby, who knows if he's going to be back. Like, New York, sadly, is in a really tough spot, which is such a shame because, frankly, they were the second best team in the East this year when they were fully healthy. And a second round series against New York would be amazing. Also, I just don't feel like going to Orlando. I'd rather go to New York in the second round, assuming that's how it plays out. But so, you know, most of these games are going to be against teams that are tanking. I mean, Charlotte just announced that Clifford is stepping down. It's like, I don't think they're trying to win games at this point necessarily. I think they're just trying to fool around. Although I guess if I'm Steve Clifford, I'm probably trying to get whatever win I can before I maybe am forced into retirement. So, you know, these games, it's just a lot of tanking teams and teams that are just kind of like, you have no idea what they're going to do. But I assume the Bucks are going to play their guys in that one to solidify the two seed and get home court advantage in the second round. Didn't they play their guys at the end of the season 2 years ago or last year? I forget when that was exactly. Remember that being a little contentious.
There was the ducking the Nets particular portion of the season 2 years ago that got They got a little nuts, and it was like, you know, I don't know why everybody made a big deal out of it in Boston, swept them in four games, although all of them were close. So let's just throw that out there. It wasn't like
that was a tough sweep.
Yeah, they didn't kill them, but it was a sweep. So it didn't really end up mattering. So yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't, for me, if you're looking at it from a Celtics standpoint, Jared, it's like, you know, who cares what the Bucks do, because they're probably going to get, I'm not a big Cleveland guy. I don't know where you're at on that. I like some of their parts. I don't love the way the team functions in total. And I do feel with you about the Knicks, but it's just like one of these things where, you know, can we stop Jaylen Brown from hurting his hand before we get into the postseason here? Because this is 2 years in a row of this, and I'm just getting kind of sick of it, to be honest with you. Quick break to tell you, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It's the easiest and most exciting way to get on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. Just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in, folks. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hopes, knowledge, into some serious cash. And Prize Picks even offers injury insurance so that if your entries stay in play, even if one of your players gets injured. And right now for basketball, that's huge. Like, Cade Cunningham got, like, scratched before the game, 10 minutes prior to the game, and all I saw on the internet was everybody melting down over this Cade Cunningham designation. Well, guess what? Prize Picks has you covered in case of that, and Prize Picks is now the official daily fantasy sponsor of CLNS. And thanks to our new partnership, our listeners get a sweet new deal to sign up with Prize Picks. Just download the app, use the promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100 after you download the app. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
I mean, yeah, go ahead. No, I got nothing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, as far as the Cavs go, they've barely been healthy for a couple months. So it's hard to even really judge who they are and what they're going to be. The Brown thing, for sure. I mean, just and this is just universal as far as Boston goes, and any fan of their team would say the same thing. Let's just enter the playoffs healthy, see where things go from there. I know it's more physical. I know guys, you know, play harder, if you will, have a tendency to get more banged up. But just stay healthy, stay available, and we know what this team is capable of. And to that end, Jared, this is something Evan and I were talking about a little while ago. So I, you know, just scrolling social media, be it, you know, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, I have come across now multiple new Jason Tatum commercials that I had not seen. There was the watch commercial that, you know, that one I think is a couple weeks old. And then I just saw for the first time a new Jumpman commercial, obviously, for his sneakers. We know he's done, you know, Subway and various like Doritos or chips or whatever else, among other things. I mean, he has to be. I didn't look this up, so I can't say this as a certainty, but it feels like, and Ev mentioned this earlier, it feels like he is, as far as American-born NBA players, the guy who is in the most advertisements right now. He is the face as far as the NBA goes. Do you believe that, you know, I know the NBA doesn't quote fingers, like root for any specific team to win a championship, but how much would the league, do you think, like to see Boston, a marquee franchise that hasn't won in a while, obviously, but with Tatum, who is, you know, perennially now in the MVP conversation? He's not going to win. He shouldn't win, but he's a guy that gets that attention. He's, you know, the talking heads will discuss him and his candidacy and all of that for years to come, as they have been for a couple of years already. He's a first team all NBA guy each and every year. And now he's getting the gigantic contract, record setting this coming offseason. How much would the league like Tatum and the Celtics to win a championship?
Sure, David Stern is pulling some strings right now from the grave to make it happen, right? Can they get a Celtics-Lakers final? I'm sure they're still rooting for it. Yeah, I mean, sure, of course they want. I'm sure the league office would love for Tatum to be the one that comes out, just because it gives him the real national star turn, gives him more of an international star turn as well. He is now like a key sneaker face. He, like, the last year or so, his branding has really kind of taken off, where he's got multiple endorsement deals. He's basically the face of Gatorade, basically the face of Jordan brand right now. And he's in one of the biggest markets, and he's a package deal, right? Like, he comes with Deuce, and Deuce has some juice. He really does. Like, people love Deuce, at least on the internet. I think he actually is a real draw for sure. And he's going to be in Jordan commercials, I assume, at one point, if he hasn't already. I can't even remember. But yeah, I mean, JT is definitely becoming like a top five face in the league right now, as like the older faces start to kind of slowly phase out. So sure, of course they would want that. Yeah, people bring up the American thing. I think Tatum probably has more juice in America than like a Luka, than like Jokic and Embiid, who just aren't really marketed at a prime level. Giannis is like someone who I think people tend to leave out of the conversation. I feel like Giannis is still one of the biggest faces of the sport. And he, you know, unlike JT, Giannis really, really shines in the branding spotlight. Like, he's got a huge smile on his face. He brings a ton of charisma and energy. And I think he's been kind of the ideal guy to be the face of the league, because he really loves being in front of people and being in front of the cameras, while JT is very introverted. And it's like, you know, I mean, he's certainly grown and improved, but he's a very introverted person. And so that's where the quandary, I think, comes to the league, is like, do you want your main American star at this point so far, because like obviously Ant Edwards is coming for that, and Ant Edwards is one of the most charismatic players I've seen in my time in the league, as is Giannis.
And a successful actor too.
Yeah, but Ant has so much MJ to him, right? Like his game looks exactly like MJ's. His swagger is similar to MJ's, even kind of looks a little bit like MJ. Like he has that MJ it factor, and that's why I think if he ever like wins at a high level, he'll probably be that guy. But also his shoe is incredible. Although I've actually warmed up the JT shoes. I actually like his shoes. But Ant's, that first shoe is just amazing. Adidas knocked it out of the park. But so I think with JT, it's like, yes, they're obviously the league would like to have at least like one American player who, you know, is competing at like that, that has the championships, is at that top level. Just because it's like easier to market him to middle America probably. But the point I'm making is I think it's overblown, the whole American thing. It's like Giannis is from Greece, but he is as charismatic and enjoyable and as relatable of an athlete as possible. And I think it's just kind of showing maybe the rest of the country, like we're all from the Massachusetts area, right? So we're kind of used to diversity and we're used to global diversity and all that kind of stuff. So I think like that's something that we come to expect. While I think marketing to like middle America and like other parts of the country, it's, you know, it's maybe a little bit harder of a sell. So I think at the end of the day, it's like the NBA is in great hands right now with Giannis and with Ant coming in. But when you have, it's really about just the person's personality. And it's like JT, Luka, Jokic, these guys are real introverts and they don't sell. Like they don't try to be a part of selling with their personality and like being engaging and fun in the way that guys like Ant and Giannis and Embiid do. And so, yeah, I forget where I was going with all this because we're kind of lost in it. But Boston, big star, that's a plus. That's a win for the NBA for sure.
Yeah, I mean, ratings-wise, you're seeing what important stars in primetime do with Caitlin Clark in Iowa. I mean, like, what was it, 12.3 million people watched that game? And it was, again, you know, what a lot of people...
You're Ryan Russillo, and then you're not into it.
That's tough.
I replied to a friend of mine who tweeted that. What was he talking about there? Like, Ryan Russillo saying that he turned the game off? It's like, that... Listen, okay, if you're one of those people, it's like, I don't want to watch women's athletes and like whatever, I guess you can't really be sold on it. I thought that game was amazing.
It was awesome. And
incredible. It was an amazing game. Away.
Yeah. It's like, if you can get over the fact that they're not dunking and just like I'm an X and O's person. So it's like the women's game, honestly, from an X and O standpoint is more interesting a lot of the time now because of how simplified the NBA game has become. And the whole time I'm watching that first half with LSU and Iowa, I'm screaming at the TVs. I'm like, why are you in drop coverage on Caitlin Clark? So it's like, for me, it was a fascinating X's and O's experience. I love that game. I didn't know like the end of the game slogged on, but the whole time I'm like, I can't believe LSU was continuing to fight and stay in this. So I loved it. That was one of my favorite games of basketball I've watched like all year. That wasn't like a down to the wire kind of game. And for me, it's as someone who doesn't watch a lot of women's basketball just because like, I don't really watch much basketball outside of the NBA. That's like, that takes up most of my time. I honestly don't even know who's in the Final Four at this point, like as far as players are concerned. Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are probably the only two athletes I think I know that are, I guess Angel got eliminated. But like that game had star power and it had interesting strategic elements to it. And Kim Mulkey is like the most entertaining coach I've ever seen. Like her outfits are wild, her antics are wild. Like it's fun to watch. She's insane. I can't tell if I'm rooting for her or against her. I have no idea, but like that's what makes it fun. So I mean, that game was like that. If you're trying to get sold on watching women's basketball, like I feel like that game is the perfect selling point. You're either going to accept it or you're not, I guess. But that was a fun game.
And just a little segue on this, because what the hell? We're a basketball show. We don't have to be just Celtics or just men or just NBA or anything else. As far as Caitlin Clark goes, and yeah, like I'm not a gigantic consumer of women's basketball, be it the W or college level, but you know, everybody at this point in time knows the Caitlin Clark story. And you know, there aren't too many of her games that I have watched in full. This one, you know, I was invested in it. I bet on it, but I wanted to see like all the hype surrounding again Clark versus Reese in this matchup. And so I wanted to watch this thing. And you know, it just what stunned me, I don't know if maybe you know more than I do in this respect, so you weren't as surprised, but what stunned me watching this thing was everybody knows there are commercial ads about it. Like we know Caitlin Clark's range and we've all seen the highlights and we know that she's just an absurd shooter and you know, going back to the All-Star break, the conversation of let's get her and Sabrina in the All-Star game next year, not the game, but the three-point contest against Steph and Dame or something like that. Like it's, you know, because she obviously projects to be in the WNBA at that point, number one overall pick, all of that. But watching this game, what I certainly didn't know, and I realize the diehards of women's college basketball are well aware, but I am not that. I mean, I had no idea that her playmaking ability was at such a high level. I mean, that's obviously great. I knew she could shoot, but the passing was like out of control. Her ability to set up her teammates, it, like she's not this one trick pony that I feel like she sort of gets advertised as. I thought that was as compelling as anything else.
One thing that I think was really fun about watching her is that, you know, a lot of the time in the NBA, it's like you got guys like Luka and Jokic who basically just kind of sit back and then just make absurd plays. Or you have like a JT, for instance, who is someone who's really good at deep driving kicks. And like, that's something he's really improved at. And watching her, it was honestly a little like, it felt like a bit of a throwback in that I was seeing her kind of running pick and roll and then throwing really early pocket passes to the roller and stuff like that. And it was just cool to watch kind of more of the traditional pick and roll style that we had maybe 10 years ago before like the game kind of got to the evolution where it is now, where she was just making a lot of really early passes. And for me, like that's the part that's really interesting for me. It's not so much the I'm going to drive super deep and then I'm going to be able to make that, you know, that kick out, or I'm going to hang in the air and make that kick out. It's like, can I get over a screen and then pass ahead of into a space where a teammate's about to enter into, as opposed to just like finding a stationary shooter. And that's the stuff that I think is really, really fun to watch, because that's where it's like this person is one, like taking a risk, and two, the team is on such a string that they're just throwing that pass, hoping that that cutter is going to be there. And like that stuff you don't see as much in the NBA anymore, just because of everything either being collapsed post up like Boston's doing, or real spread out five out stuff, or like dunker spot stuff where it's like you just drive and then you draw two, two, and then you drop it off. So like there's a lot of that kind of stuff in there that I think is the stuff that's really interesting. You don't even see as much in the NBA anymore.
Well, Ev, I'm a big narrative street guy, so I am eager to bet on Caitlin Clark in Iowa to beat UConn after she talked about how all she dreamt about when she was younger was playing for the Huskies, and they didn't even give her the time of day. So I'm all about the how ugly this could potentially look in the next game.
Oh yeah, I mean, she's been box office all year. This tournament has been literally one big buildup to see how far she would go. She's delivered, no question. No disrespect to LSU. They were tremendous. Angel Reese, and she was dominating that game to start, then got hurt, and then she was in foul trouble. So I think wasn't a real good barometer of how good of a player she is. And some of the stuff that's come out afterwards is disgusting. Not really down for that. But it's been fun to watch. And, you know, between Juju Watkins, I thought one of the best games of the tournament was Baylor USC. That was a tremendous game. And it came down like the last couple of minutes in the fourth quarter, but it was basically a 2-point game the entire game. I almost feel a little bad because I was so close. I live an hour outside of Albany, so I could have gone to see Caitlin Clark, but it like was like $500 get-in price for the first couple of games, and then the LSU
$500.
The LSU game was out. Yeah. The get-in price was outrageous. Just gonna tell you. I did consider. My dad and I were like, you know, Caitlin Clark's like only an hour. We should definitely go. And we're like, all right, well, maybe not. Those are a little steep.
That's an unfortunate but good sign that women's college basketball is doing pretty well if they're playing in Albany and they're still selling tickets for that insane of a price. So
It was more expensive to go to like any Caitlin Clark game than most of the tournament games on the men's side this year. I'm just going to be flat out about that.
That's probably we'd rather watch her play though.
WNBA next year and makes a fraction of what she'd make staying in college, but that's the reality of the game and the sport and everything, right? At least she can get that $5 million payout going and playing 10 games in the Big Three over the summer. So there's that. But hey, real quick before we do sign off, we mentioned obviously the women, may as well touch on the men. So UConn's a powerhouse. I think we all know that at this point in time. The Huskies really should make it back to back for the first time since Al Horford's Florida Gators back in 06-07, but they've got this upcoming battle with another offensive powerhouse juggernaut in Alabama, but not nearly the defensive team that the Huskies are. On the other side, Zach Edey and Purdue against DJ Burns and NC State, DJ Horn as well. Betting wise, for anyone that cares about that, I mean, one, I've had a UConn futures ticket for a while, so give me the Huskies. But I'm on UConn to cover in this game. I actually like NC State with the points. I saw it. It's 9.5, 10 right now. I think this has just been, Jared, I don't know how closely you've been paying attention to the tourney, but NC State has been just such a fun story, obviously, from, you know, getting the automatic bid, doing the Kemba Walker, UConn winning 5 games in as many days to win the ACC, and then this run they've gone on the tournament. And, you know, no, they're not going to beat Purdue as an 11 seed. It's not going to happen. You know, we'll get that UConn-Purdue matchup that everybody wants in the final, but I think the Wolfpack can keep it close, and that's enough for me to be entertained.
I hope you're not sending it to me because I have no idea what's going on.
You should watch matter. This stuff. You'd like
I will. UConn. I will.
UConn's going to roll. Ain't going to matter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always rooting for the underdog, so I'd like to see NC State win. But NC State's in the Final Four for both, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that would be cool to see a Cinderella win for both. I don't know.
I think it's Emeka Okafor and Diana Taurasi last time that happened. I'm pretty sure.
The irony that the UConn would have to go down for both of those. That'd be cool. I mean, yeah, I'm a New Englander, so I'd love to see UConn win, I guess. But
I thought you were going to say, I'm a New Englander, so college sports doesn't matter to me.
Well, that too. I mean, listen, I went to BU. I grew up, I mean, shout out to BC. Part of the reason why I just enjoy watching a women's game is when I was a kid, the BC women's team would give tickets to my elementary school. So when I was really young, I would go watch their games, and I had a great time. So, and I was 3 feet tall, so everybody looked tall to me back then. So, you know, that was, yeah.
I'm barely above 3 feet now.
Yeah. So unless BC's involved, I probably, or if BU is involved, I would be all about it. But I don't think my Terriers are getting anywhere near that anytime soon.
So believe it or not, this was a Celtics podcast. C's are back at it on Friday, tomorrow, as we sit here right now. Game at home against the Kings shouldn't be too compelling, but who knows? Some of these games go a little wonky. We saw what happened in Atlanta, obviously. So you get the Kings and the Blazers to take you through the weekend. We'll be back with you next week at some point in time. And we're just inching closer to a playoff preview in probably means next week we'll start to dive into potential first round matchups and seeding and all of that good stuff. But one thing we do know, Jared and Evan, is that Boston firmly planted atop the NBA in the standings, and hopefully come banner raising time in a couple of months as well. For Evan Valenti, for Jared Weiss, I am Adam Kaufman. Check out Jared's work in The Athletic. We didn't have time to get to it, but a great piece on a conversation with Grant Williams about what a miserable effing teammate he is and terrible person. So you should make sure you check that out. And we'll talk to you again next week.